This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, I know.
Hello there, Dumpty Dum. We are
Hello.
With the Hay Bales. We've decided as our pseudonym, and we have listened to the podcast for several months now, but this is our first time as a caller in, so we have a Dumpty Dum for you.
Yes.
Ready?
Yes.
Dumpty 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 Dum, Dumpty Dumpty Dum, Dumpty 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 Dum, Dumpty Diddly Dum, Dumpty Diddly Dumpty Diddly Dumpty Diddly Dum, Dumpty 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 Diddly Dumpty Diddly Dum. There we go.
This is Dumpty Dum, the show about the reality docudrama that is centered on Ambridge in the heart of the Midlands. I'm the joyful celebration of life that is Royfield Brown. And with me, I have the mournful funeral that is
Angela Barnes.
And the last part of our weary wake, folks, is you. Now, this week's Dumpty Dum, it's last week's. It's Hay Bales back. So well done, Hay Bales. Pair of lovely people, you. But Angela, we need some fresh ones. So if someone wants to send us in a fresh Dumpty Dum, how can they do that?
If you'd like to sing us a Dumpty Dum, leave us a plot prediction, call us on 0203 031 3105 or leave us a message on SpeakPipe. Thanks to Cosmo for his podcast roundups and doing the Dumpty Dogs, and to Derek for the loan of the back bedroom.
Ah,
it's nice in this back bedroom, isn't it?
Yeah, it's lovely, lovely.
Yeah, really... I like satin sheets.
Satin sheets and the waterbed. On this week's episodes, we have calls from Witherspoon, who looks into the heads of Eddie and Matt. Auntie Jean, who wishes Angela all the best in Edinburgh. Rosie, who was a hater but is now a lover. You know what? I love it when people, you know, used to be haters but then become lovers.
Yeah, that is nice.
Are you a lover?
Oh, I'm a lover.
Are you?
It's a lover, Royf.
Ooh, let's talk about that later.
Life's too short for hating. I haven't got the energy.
In it, no. Paul Room, who dislikes a plummy voice. And Andrew Horn, who looks at two sets of Ambridge couples. But first, before all that, Angela, right, no, there is no monologue, is there?
There isn't. I have to do a grovelling apology here to the people of Dumpty Dumshire.
Right.
Basically,
will this apology approximately last for 5 minutes? Will it be funny and insightful at times?
The thing is, if we could have like the playing of violins in the background, that would be really helpful.
Oh, yeah, I can definitely put that in post-production.
See if you can do that, because I am currently in Edinburgh. The Edinburgh Fringe starts tomorrow, and I'm not panicking. I am breathing, and I am on Valium, so it's going to be fine. And what that means is I have spent the last week working on my new show. It's called Fortitude. If you're up here, please do come and see
Angela,
it.
Angela, this is not an advert.
I've got to get a plug in at least. But what that means is I have had zero time in the last week, and every day I've been like, oh god, I haven't written a Dumpty Dum monologue, and obviously you can't write it till the end of the week anyway, and I've just been, it's been, yes, I had all day of press stuff and a tech rehearsal and things, and I just ran out of time. So I apologize to the Dumpty Dummers that this week there will be no monologue about a week in Ambridge, but hey, you've all listened,
Angela,
to it.
I feel like that did last for 5 minutes, but it wasn't funny.
Right, I'm sorry. Call myself a comedian. Come on, Dumpty Dum. I am literally hanging my head in shame right now.
All right. Now, hang your head, but then pull it back up again and tell me about something that stuck out for you in the last week in Ambridge.
Well, I mean, it's got to be Swampy Jill, right? Amazing. Jill gets arrested. 86 gets a criminal record. Go, Jill.
Well, it proves it's never too late for any of us.
My only thing about that whole episode, that whole scene, is like, I do get what they're doing about protesting against food waste, but I'm not sure that restaurant is the right target. Like, surely the government and austerity and all the things that mean people are starving are the right target. Do you know what I mean?
I suppose what she said, I actually agree with you. And I think way back about 3-4 weeks ago, it was Naked Fingers that actually pointed out a few inconsistencies in all of this. And that's before you do the whole, well, Jill is, and she even says it, and, you know, that she's throwing food, you know, she's wasting food in and of itself. But Naked Fingers did actually point out the somewhat kind of hypocrisy in this, in that, you know, Jill, a well-meaning charity.
Yeah.
What that charity did was to provide people who had time on their hands with something to do, whereby at least this establishment will actually begin people employment. So, you know, actually will help the economy, you know.
Yeah.
And there are many, you know, when you sit down and think about the issues to do with food waste and specifically this restaurant, it's somewhat kind of confused. But it's the ostentatiousness of a restaurant that charges a shed load of money for food, and the fact that it's taken over the place of, you know, somewhere which, you know, was in inverted commas helping the downtrodden, the poor, the weary, etc.
I think my problem with that though is it was always a temporary lease. Like, it's not like that had been a long established place that had been bulldozed for a restaurant. It was always going to happen. And, you know, if it's a pop-up place, they can pop up somewhere else. I mean, I'm very much obviously pro the Happy Faces Cafe, whatever it's called, Happy Friends. And in fact, have, you know, in my previous life, have worked in places like that. But I think the target for their demonstration being the restaurant just isn't doing them any favours, because the restaurant had already bought the lease. That's what it's going to be. It had planning permission. They've done all the right things. It's not, the issue is the fact that families can't afford to feed themselves. Working families in this country can't afford to feed themselves. And that energy of that demonstration, I felt, should have been, you know, at either the local council about providing a new...
You are completely and utterly correct that really the issue is the working poor, isn't it? That we have in this country a level of wages which is that low that we actually tacitly admit as a society that people cannot survive off of a minimum wage, whereby we have working tax credits and all manner of things. You know, wait on, these people are working, but we subsidise the poor wages that many people get from their employer, and that shouldn't actually be the case. It's one thing if you cannot find work and you cannot eat, that is one thing. But the scandal is actually what you said, that some people are working and doing 40 hours, 30 hours a week and still cannot survive. No. And really our ire should really be turned away from the Duxford sisters and onto economic structures within this country. But anyway, just before we go, I go on another socialist rant, right? I ain't bored of these bloody Duxford sisters.
Well, I mean, they're obviously quite comic characters, I think, the Duxford sisters. There's quite comically, you know, those sorts of bullying chefs. I mean, despite what I feel about the fact the protest, I think, was misdirected and just essentially wouldn't ever have happened, what a great episode.
It was a great episode.
What a great episode to have Harrison having to make that decision to arrest Jill Archer. It's just brilliant. I love it. And then Jill in the police station, you know, having her fingerprints taken. When David rocks up, that was just brilliant. Talk about role reversal. You know, when she says to him, "What are you doing here?" And he's like, "What am I doing here? You're 86.
I think it was just, yeah, I think whoever really should have worked this out, really, and actually had a look, but whoever wrote last week's episode actually had an utter blast. And you know that in that script writers meeting, they said, let's just have a little bit of fun. Let's get Jill arrested. And we know that people are going to go, this is just ridiculous. And to heighten it, you know, she throws a flapjack. The whole thing was just absurd in extremis. But, you know, we all loved it because it was just so blooming ridiculous. And of course, of all the policemen in all of the county of Borsetshire, it had to be Harrison that had to be there at that time. Yeah.
That, I just love that he's, is there no other police officer in Borsetshire?
Well, George Barford's been dead for about 15 years, so the answer is no.
Oh, dear. And I'm sure there would have been another, if there was a demonstration, I reckon there'd been at least two police officers present.
Well, I don't know, because it's going to be a demonstration in what? Well, that's in Felpersham.
Where is the restaurant? That's a really good question. Is it? It's not in the village, is it?
No. It's either in Borsetshire or it's in Felpersham. It's in one or the other. And I get the two mixed up all the time. But so it's going to be in a little market town, right? And it's going to be a bunch of do-gooding middle-class WY ladies, basically. Do you need a policeman for that normally?
I don't know what the legality is of it, because I know... I'm sure there was some reference in it too, because obviously he knew there was going to be a protest because he was there.
Mm.
Otherwise, why would the police have been there? You know, police don't generally turn up at the opening of a restaurant, I don't think.
True.
So they must have registered that there was going to be a protest, in which, I mean, I'm getting picky here now. It was still a great episode.
Yeah. Well, it will go down in the Archer's annals, won't it?
Absolutely. You know,
when did Jill get arrested and what for? What did Jill Archer hurl? You know, to be arrested, you know, it'll be in an Archer's quizzes in like 10, 15 years' time.
What she needed was one of, not Caroline, Auntie Cardboard's rock hard scones. That's what she needed.
Oh, good grief. It wouldn't have been assault, it would have been murder, attempted murder at the very least. Now, you, yes. I think we should do a little bit of quarter in a reaction.
Good plan.
Hello, Ambridge 3962.
First, we have Witherspoon.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Toss salads and scrambled eggs. Mercy.
Greetings, Angela, Royfield, Yoko Bear, and all Dumpty Dummers around the world. Witherspoon and Angus Haggis here. The question was raised last week by Miss Blythe Spirit as to whether Eddie was a sociopath, or technically, whether he has antisocial personality disorder. Brings us back to the days of dissecting Rob's brain. First off, my psychiatric gut says no, Eddie does not pass the smell test of a sociopath. While Eddie is frequently deceitful and manipulative, I wouldn't say he's callous or hostile. He certainly can be irresponsible, but the big question is whether he lacks empathy. I would say he does possess the quality of being able to empathize with others when it comes down to it. And so while he has some antisocial traits, and many Dumpty Dummers don't like him because of them, he does not possess the disorder. On the other hand, and I hate to keep banging on and on and on about this, Matt is a sociopath. While the host may think Lillian's path to happiness leads through Matt's hotel room, I don't. He's stolen her money and money from others. Remember when he tried to cheat that nice elderly couple whose Amside house was in great disrepair, ultimately leading to the death of the husband? And remember when he sent a thug to harass his brother, ultimately leading to his death? If Lillian were to wind up with Matt again, it will lead to her misery. I've heard stories like this too many times from women sitting on the couch across from me. I'll let that be the last word today from me on the topic. I'm having much too nice a holiday to get stressed out by Matt, or by Donald Trump for that matter. So I'll talk to you soon.
Now, Witherspoon says, our Angela.
Yeah.
Now, he answers Blythe Spirit, and Eddie is not a sociopath, but Matt is. Discuss.
Well, what I think is interesting about, I think he's right, Eddie isn't a sociopath. Eddie's an idiot and has been brought up in a world where, you know, wheeling and dealing and a little bit of crime is just his world.
It's not wheeling and dealing, it's ducking and a diving, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And that's just his way of life. And I think Witherspoon's right, he does show empathy sometimes. I don't think he's completely without empathy, and he's not cold. You know, he loves his family. And he, in his own weird way, is trying to do what's best for them, really.
Yeah.
You know he loves Clary. You know that relationship is believable.
Yeah, he cuts corners, does Eddie. But he doesn't actually set out to harm anybody. Though, in his cutting corners, he frequently hurts people. Whereas Matt, as Witherspoon very clearly said, you know, wanted to put the scarers up of that elderly couple some years ago. Do you remember?
Yeah, I do remember. And you know, he is a nasty piece of work, Matt. And I think what I'd say to Witherspoon, I know Witherspoon said that, you know, we think that Lillian's path to happiness is through Matt. And I don't think that. What I think is what the reason I want Lillian and Matt to get back together is because that's better drama.
That's absolutely.
I don't for one second think that that's the best for Lillian. The best for Lillian is either to be on her own or to settle down with Justin if that's what she wants. But that's a bit dull, isn't it? Whereas Pussycat and Tiger, that's I'm hooked.
Have you ever had a really tempestuous relationship, Angela?
Yes.
Well, do you think you should give up your current pleasant, really tranquil relationship, which you're really happy, and then go back not. To that one because it was better
absolutely.
Drama?
It's exhausting. Those sorts of relationships are exhausting. And I think when you're young, you kind of cope with it, and it's all drama, and it's all, you know, that's what a bit exciting and a bit. I'm 40 now. I get enough excitement, you know, getting out of bed in the morning. It's so nice to be. And my relationship, what I realised, is a settled and happy relationship isn't boring necessarily. Like, I've been in relationships before where I've been bored, but my relationship's still exciting. And I, you know, I absolutely couldn't imagine being without Matt. But I don't have drama in it, and it's wonderful.
So, you know, you said you had a tempestuous relationship before.
Yeah.
Right. Feel free to expand upon that. In what way was it tempestuous, Angela?
I was very young, and he was very young as well. Like, we were in our 20s, and it was on and off and up and down. And it was just two people who should never have got together in the first place, just kind of making a drama out of nothing and thriving on that drama at that point. But it made me really depressed and really, you know, it was either
but
really...
Didn't it make you feel like you were alive at times, though? And didn't it make the making up even more tumultuous?
It did, but it wasn't... The payoff was never worth it. It was never worth the pain and the, you know, ball ache of just the stress and the constantly wondering where you stand.
Did
and...
your partner frequently have ball ache?
Probably. them repeatedly. But yeah, no, it's just too exhausting, you know. And it's too, I mean, the particular partner I'm talking about, God rest his soul, he passed away a couple of years ago.
Oh, no.
He was a drinker, and it was just too much, you know. And
is that the reason why he passed away? Because of his drinking?
Yeah, he was 43.
Oh no.
Yeah, no age. And we were still friends actually, but once we stopped having a relationship, we became very good friends. But in the relationship, it was just exhausting. I was like 21 when we got, you know, when we were together, and it was all very exciting at the time. He was a 6'5" Australian, and I was all very excited by it. But it was just such hard work.
Oh, bless him.
Yeah, it was really sad, really sad.
You made me think, though. When's the last time we had an alcoholic on the Archers?
Oh. Who? I don't know.
Like, there's something in the back of my mind is saying, of course we've had an alcoholic on the Archers, but I can't think. Like, Kenton threatened to become one last year, didn't he, to do with the whole kind of money thing?
Yeah. I'm sure there must have been people with drink problems on the Archers.
You'd think so, wouldn't you? You know, you got the bull there as the fulcrum for their drinking.
I can't think of any, like, anyone who's been through AA or any of that. Do we have Ed with the drugs?
Jack, well, thinking about it, you did actually have Jack. So Peggy's husband.
Yeah.
But we haven't had anybody recently.
No, that's...
Maybe Daryl? Did Daryl... Was Daryl on drugs or was it drink?
I think he liked to drink, but he was just destitute, wasn't he, rather than...
I think it might be Daryl. Like, I've got seem to remember he was in the Bull, falling out of the Bull drunk because he couldn't find work or something or other. And I think, wasn't that...
That does ring a bell.
Yeah, his Polish wife was, you know, moaning, saying, what money you do have, you're spending it down the Bull. But Cosmo or somebody else who's sufficiently anal and accurate when it comes to these things will definitely be able to know. But I actually think there's got to be a storyline there. And let's do female alcoholism. And where somebody's a working alcoholic as well.
So with young people as well. You know, maybe one of the younger ones.
Mm.
Maybe Pip will turn to drink.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. So I think we've just about dealt with Witherspoon, haven't we?
I think so.
Let's nip to Auntie Jean, who's a big fan of you.
I'm a big fan of Auntie Jean. Jean, Jean, let yourself
go. Hello, everybody at Dumpty Dum. It's Auntie Jean here. It's been lovely having Angela on the podcast. She's done a sterling work while she's been away. And wish her all the best for the Edinburgh Festival. I'm sure that she will do extremely well and have lots and lots and lots of people giggling in the aisles. First of all, I would like to say that Jill has auditioned successfully for the cast of Orange is the New Black and will be taking up her role in the autumn. She will, of course, be in charge of lemon drizzle cake and flapjacks when she gets there, and I'm sure they'll all be very grateful for that. I hope that Oliver will stay now that Caroline is no longer with us. It would be lovely to have him in the village. Whether he will want Grange Farm back, I don't know. I doubt it. I don't think, as some people have suggested, that he will be giving it to Ed. I think that might be a bit too far. But I think that he'll let them stay. And I'm sorry about this, but I know Ed was lovely at the memorial service and all, but I still can't stand him. He just drives me, his voice drives me nutty. It's hopeless. And as for Harrison Burns, he goes around assaulting old ladies who are throwing flapjacks, but he still hasn't found that ready bunting, has he? Anyway, that's me. I'll speak to you again soon. Bye.
Now, Auntie Jean has wished you all the best in Edinburgh. What else did she say?
That's lovely. So, Auntie Jean thinks that Jill is a shoo-in for Orange is the New Black. And that is something I would love to see. I would love to see her turn up on that. Do you watch Orange is the New Black?
I absolutely love it. At the end of the last season...
And then I stopped.
What season?
I watched the first two seasons.
Don't stop. It is good.
No, I need to go back to it.
Piper in the seasons going on plays less and less of a starring role. You know, season one, it was so obviously, season one and two, she's obviously a vehicle for her. Less so in the seasons kind of going forward, but it still is brilliantly written, fantastically acted, and dramatic and horrible things happen, but it still manages to have lots of heart. Lots of heart.
Get back into that.
Yeah. The end of season three is actually quite shocking. Without giving you an utter plot spoiler, somebody dies and you do not see it coming. And, you know, if your eyes do not fill up because this character is just so lovely, you know, you've got a heart of stone. Heart of stone. So you got to watch it and tell me that you cry. Because if you don't, me and you are through. Or is it the end of season four? Then end of season three is when they get let out accidentally. Anyway, the end of one of the seasons, you're going to cry. And if you don't bother darkening my podcasting door again, Barnes. Because you would be the sociopath.
Yeah, that should be the sociopath test.
Yeah. Absolutely. So you're up in Edinburgh.
Yes,
How long are you up there for?
I am here, so I've been here since Sunday, and I go back to London on the 28th of August. So I'm here for pretty much a month. Mm-hmm. It's exciting. I love doing the Edinburgh Fringe, but it's sort of stressful and exciting in equal measure. So, you know, one minute I'll be like, this is brilliant. I'm at the biggest arts festival in the world. How lucky am I? And then the next day it's just, I want to go home and it's raining again. But yeah, no, I'm very, very lucky to be here. So.
I do have a prurient side, and I could talk to you about, you know, the meaning of the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. but I'm more interested in the sex, drugs, and rock and roll. To be fair. Now, Angela, I'm not saying that you partake necessarily in lots of sex when you're up there in Edinburgh.
Absolutely not.
But there must be some drugs and rock and roll.
Oh, yeah. It turns into a bit of a party town for August, to be honest. So I first came to the Edinburgh Fringe when I was 18 in 1995. I did a student play. Mm-hmm. And that was, you know, it wasn't my job then. It was just a bit of a jolly, really. And so it was great as an 18-year-old. All the bars stay open till 5 a.m. And there was just, it was crazy. But now it's, you know, it's my job and I have to do a good show every day. I don't get involved in all the partying. So I'm sharing a flat with Matt Richardson, who is a comic. You may know, he used to host Extra Factor, you know, the X Factor.
Oh, yeah.
So we're sharing a flat together and we're being really dull. You know, we've got our slippers and our dressing gowns and we're books to read. And yeah, so it won't be a party town for me, but it certainly is for some. I mean, there's a lot of, there's what they call the industry bars. So you get, as a performer, you get passes for these bars in town that are just for performers, and they can be carnage, and they're open till 5 a.m. every night of the week.
Wow.
Yeah. So it can get messy, but not for me. I'll be a good girl in bed with my Horlicks by 9 o'clock.
Yay. Good for you.
When I'm in a gutter somewhere crying.
Shall we do Rosie now?
Let's do Rosie.
Hi, Dum to Dum. I'm Rosie. I've been listening to Dum to Dum for about a year, and I'm a first-time caller in a row. I'm an event manager, which means, because I live in Devon and there's no corporate company spending money on events down here, it means I'm a wedding planner. I hate that phrase, but I'm wedding planner-ish. Don't tell anyone. Anyway, I've been listening to The Archers since 1988, when I was born, probably since I was an embryo in that year, which probably makes me either a Pip Archer or an Alice. I'm not sure which of those is worse, but I'll take Alice over Pip. I'm hoping I'm Alice, because Pip would be bad. Anyway, I'm calling in because I would just like to say how I've never in 1 week gone from hating a character so much to loving her. Jill Archer has been so vile for the last few months. In fact, probably the last year and a bit, where she used to be so wonderful. Anyway, she's been horrible vile. And it was a pinnacle when she said to Kirsty, "I will stand here and scream until you tell me." It was just like Violet Elizabeth from the Joss Williams series saying, "I'll scream and scream and scream until I'm sick." That's what Jill reminded me of.
Hey, baby, I hear
anyway,
the blues are calling.
I think
toss salads
she has
and
got up my estimation a whole load because she's 86 and she's got her first criminal record for protesting and throwing flapjacks. I think that's bloody brilliant. That's it from me, Dum to Dummers. Over and out. I hope I've included everything. Probably forgotten something. I live in Devon. That's the other thing. Anyway, yeah. Great. Love the podcast. Over and out.
Now, Rosie is a first-time caller in her, and she did everything spot on the money, didn't she?
Absolute 4 points to Rosie. I think we can all learn from Rosie.
Well done,
be
Rosie.
More...
now, again, I think there's a lot of Jill love this week,
yeah.
Isn't there?
Yeah. She's saying that, because Jill has been a bit of a monster over the last 18 months. She's right. You know, that all that stuff with, what's his name? Oh, God, I've forgotten his name. Rex's brother, Toby.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of that stuff with Pip and the...
Monster's a bit harsh.
Well,
Rob Titchener was a monster.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. Okay, maybe not a monster. Maybe just a bit of a cow.
A geriatric cow,
just
yes.
A bit mean and
I was going to say a geriatric sourpuss.
Yeah, okay, geriatric sourpuss. I'll settle with that.
Not a raving, sociopathic, bordering on murdering monster.
No.
All right, so, good.
I think what Rosie's saying is she went from, you know, because she was always so sort of inoffensive, Jill, mm-hmm. and kind of just there. And then she went over the last year, she had her real moments of not very niceness. And now suddenly this whole new Jill has come out and it's you go, girl. And it's just, you know, from being a bit angry with her and a bit like, oh, I don't like what they're doing with Jill. Because I didn't like it when she was being really mean and catty and horrible. It didn't feel right. And now it's just like, oh, yeah, she's got a cause. She's got somewhere to direct that side of her. Go,
well,
Jill.
I suppose what the script writers have done is they've said, we have this character. She's been woefully underserved by just baking for Brookers. Let's give her, you know, another dimension to her character. Yeah. So there was the, you know, railing against Toby because of it reminded her of Grace. Then they've gone, well, she's got energy, she's got a spark, let's push it in a certain direction. It cannot be beekeeping. So the beekeeping is just a way for her to become mates with Kirsty, a vehicle for that, for them to bond. And then it's a case of, you know, social activism.
Right. It's so brilliant. And I, yeah, I mean, the Rosie mentions it, that I'll stand here and scream till you tell me. Like, I love the fact that she's using the fact she's an old lady to get her, because you're not going to let an old lady stand there and scream. You know, it's like she's going to use the fact she's 86, I think, to really push it. It's brilliant. I love it.
Yeah, no. And I have always loved a little bit of Jill Archer. And I don't know, people say, oh, you know, she can be really kind of sanctimonious and stuff. She's not a Peggy.
No, you know, oh God, no.
She's not a Peggy. She's, as far as I'm concerned, she's always been lovely. Yes, there was the Grace Archer nonsense and stuff, and but I suppose those things just are hard to let go. Well, even though she was married to Phil for God knows how many years, you know, she could never quite let it go that she was number two, could she?
Yeah.
You know, and old Tobes came along and reminded her of all of that. But anyway, yeah. Rosie, welcome to the team, me dear.
Hello, Rosie.
Right. Now, it's Paul Room. Now, he is a controversial doctor.
Oh.
Mm.
Hello, Dumpty Dummers. I'd just like to phone in with a confession, I'm afraid, that isn't going to be very popular, and I fear may make me be driven out of Ambridge by pitchfork-wielding mobs. It was very sad to hear of the death of Sarah Coward. But in a way, it was good how she faced her final illness and gave a lot of publicity and talking frankly about death, which is quite a nice thing in a way. But I'm afraid to say that I never really liked the character of Caroline Sterling, Bone, Pemberton, whatever you'd like to call her. She was much too fruity for my tastes, with a sort of plummy voice, and seemed to go after men who bought the estate and had shed loads of money, and I don't know, she just seemed to bounce into the new chap who came along, and whoever there was with all the money, she would then seem to go after Cameron Fraser, Guy Pemberton, and then Oliver Sterling, and it just never sat well. I know it won't be a popular thing, but yes, just too fruity. Sorry about that.
Where do you stand on reverse snobbery?
Well, I don't understand what you meant by she's too fruity for him to take.
Well, I suppose
it was a bit fruity.
Well, I think he connected the fact that she had a plummy voice, and then he put the word fruity in. Me, fruity means that, you know, she's a bit kind of, you know, a bit liberal with her hands, and, you know, and likes a little bit of action, which I don't. Yeah, which actually, maybe he did allude to that, because okay, let's go back.
Her going from one man to the next, and
she kind. Oh, that's dreadful to say. She kind of did, but as I seen from when I came into the Archers in the '80s, she was she Caroline Pemberton then, or Bone, right? And she did. So she did have a bit of Brian.
Yeah,
and he's completely right. She always had rich partners. She never slummed it. She was never just going to shack up with Eddie or anything like that, right?
But then they're the people she would have been meeting. They were the people on her
in her social circle.
Yeah,
because she did. She was proper posh. Because wasn't Lord Netherborne's her cousin or something or another?
Something like that, because she had the royal connection as well, didn't she?
So when Princess Margaret did that, spoke a couple of lines in the Archers in the '80s.
It would be weirder if she'd ended up with a farmhand rather than the men she did. I don't think she's she's from good stock, as it were.
Ooh. Hate the phrase.
But
you just saved yourself there by saying, you know, hate the phrase. But.
Yeah. But what I mean by that is they are the sort of people she would have been meeting and would have socialised with and you can't call her a gold digger or a money grabber or any of those things, because
that's what she knows. She's
in that world already.
Yeah. Here's my difficulty with all of this, right?
Yeah.
If you're born into poverty and you were, and that's just what you're, or you're born working class, or just whatever the heck, and that's just what you are. You can't help it.
Yeah.
You know, if you're born into having a, you know, into having things a little bit easy, you're just born into it, aren't you?
Yeah, you can't help that.
You can't. Yeah, exactly. You can't help that.
I know I'm guilty of having a bit of a working class chip on my shoulder sometimes, you know, and I feel it's what it is. I think is it's the opportunity that those people have that we had to work in a different way for. So it's the sense of entitlement that people have, you know, just assume.
And that's exactly where I was going to go with this, because the one thing about Caroline, I don't think she had a sense of entitlement. She was a posh bird. Yeah. Jennifer Aldridge has a sense of entitlement.
Yeah.
She does. Caroline doesn't. And also, and Paul Room and I did talk about this on the Book of Face yesterday in Messenger. And Caroline was the godmother of Will Grundy. And she took that very seriously.
Yeah.
For the most part, 99 godparents out of 100, it's an honorific on the day of the christening, and that's it.
And then you never hear from them again.
Exactly. Yeah. But she actually took it seriously. So she gave Will a cottage. She has been, much less so now, but a mentor to Will in his teenage years, etc.
Yeah.
She absolutely was. So whether it's noblesse, noblige, or whether it's, or whatever you want to call it, she actually, number one, she never flaunted her wealth. She actually was a very capable, caring, considerate, compassionate godparent to a working class kid. And actually, through that, had a certain level of, in the end, grudging acceptance of the Grundys, because they really did, you know, trash her place. Let's be quite honest about it. You know what they did. But, you know, Oliver had to drag her a little, but she went, okay, let's give the place to the Grundys, blah, blah, blah. As posh birds go, Caroline's kind of a good one. She was a good one.
I mean, most people in that social would, you know, they'd be a landlord to the likes of the Grundys, but they wouldn't have any social doings with them. Or, you know, so the fact that she's a godparent to a Grundy, I think shows that she is, you know, in touch with that, with all the stratas of the village, you know.
No, absolutely. And as I say, in stark contrast to Jennifer.
Yeah.
In stark contrast. She is somebody who absolutely is entitled, etc., goes along to nice do's, etc., and she wouldn't have anything to do with the Grundys or with the Carters, etc.
She certainly wouldn't be a godmother.
Yeah, and also Caroline rolled her sleeves up in Grey Gables.
Yeah.
You know, she'd work with anybody, she'd fit in on the desk, etc. Nah, yeah, Paul, bang out of order, mate.
Yeah.
Can't speak ill of the dead. Don't do it.
I agree. Although, while we're talking about Caroline, I mean, the memorial was lovely, wasn't it?
Mm. Yeah.
Episode.
Yeah, no, it was. And you just know that, of course, it meant much more to the actors, because they really were
absolutely
giving Sarah a send-off. So that was absolutely lovely. And I'm sure there was not a dry tear in that studio when they were doing that, because, you know, they did that memorial for her, you know, on air, for real, so to speak. Yeah. Very touching. Shall we do a bit of Andrew Horn action now?
Yay! Horny, horny,
horny, horny. Greetings, Earthlings. Andrew Horn here with two observations for the last couple of weeks. I've really been enjoying the way they've dealt with Caroline's death, and are starting to deal with the way Oliver comes to terms with his grief. And an observation about the related to this with the Grundy boys. It's, of course, William who has a special relationship with Caroline. He's the godson. But I think it's interesting that it's actually Ed that is having more of an impact and is more going to be more helpful to Oliver, which, as you would expect, the way that Oliver has mentored him, seeing Ed return the favour is really quite heartwarming, although the clunky line about the smashed vase was just, I think, one step too far. The other point that's actually bugging me is the Fallon and Harrison move in to stay in the cottage. It looks like they've got their money now and they can stay in the village, and that's fabulous. But this whole storyline was kicked off with them wanting to move because the cottage wasn't big enough. And I think Cosmo has mentioned this elsewhere, but it's now really grating with me every time the topic comes up. So whether it was Cosmo or someone else who put it in my mind, I think you're right. And it's a real shame because that storyline is now ruined for me. Anyway, I hope you're all enjoying the summer and speak to you again soon. Bye.
I always love me a bit of Andrew Horn. Talk about somebody with a plummy voice. It's Andrew Horn.
Absolutely. What do you think of him?
Now, he looks at Ed and Will and also Harrison and Fallon. Let's deal with Harrison and Fallon first. Over to you, Angela Barnes in Edinburgh.
Well, he's bringing up that same... I think we might have talked about it last week a bit about how suddenly their dream home is Woodbine Cottage, the one that was too small for them to live in, hence they were looking for somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems a bit weird that suddenly it was, because there were complaints about them falling over each other's stuff and it being too small and them needing a bigger place. But then suddenly the issue became not about them needing a bigger place. It became about what they can afford. And what really confused me was how Caroline was only selling it because they were moving out. They could have just continued renting Woodbine.
I suppose, right, because this point, as you said, was actually raised last week, and it is a very good one. But when somewhere isn't your own and you can't, you're actually going to knock down a wall in a historic cottage, you're not, but you can't be moving things around and stuff too much because you're renting.
Yeah,
so it is going to feel a little bit too small. As soon as it's yours and you can say, let's remove those shelves from there, let's move that cupboard over there, it creates a little bit more space, etc., etc. When it's yours, you've got, you know, you can actually move things around, and actually when it's yours it feels bigger because it's yours. Though I take the point completely, they said it was too small. And that's the reason why they wanted to move. But actually, if it's yours, you've got options, haven't you?
And actually, I suppose you could also look at it. They've looked at what else is out there. They haven't necessarily found anything bigger that they can afford.
Mm.
So maybe it's just coming to terms with, okay, this is what we can, size-wise, it's fine. But then, well, I'm going into Monday's episode now, or Sunday's, but, you know, they get the money, they're going to buy, I don't know. There's something just not quite... But obviously, we need them to stay in the village, so it's all good.
Well, we don't actually need them to be in the village, do we? You know, somebody can. We have had the odd character before in the past that has lived in Felpersham. Yeah.
Penny Hassett or somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough.
But I think he's kind of been signposted for Ed and Emma, that something's going to happen with their kind of domestic situation, isn't it? Because there's a parallel storyline going on that these pair can go.
Emma talking to Fallon, she's like, oh, really? Because the houses on Bridge Farm will have bigger gardens, and as if to say, we're going to be better than you.
Yeah,
it was a really weird conversation between the two of them.
And you kind of realise in that conversation that she was her mother's daughter. You know,
absolutely.
She's still a Carter.
Yeah. Even with help to buy, I can't see how Emma and Ed could afford a family house. Even with help to, like, I don't know. Maybe, I don't know. I'm sure Cosmo will be able to.
No, Claire Asprey. That's we need her on the case now. She's all about the housing. But she did say that in the plan, in Justin's little mini new estate, that there was going to be like 7 social houses or something or another. Yeah. And we're bound to get one because, you know, we're locals brought up in the air, etc.
Yeah.
So I'm presuming that how that storyline is going to go is how all social housings go in new developments, in that yes, there is a quarter or 20%, and then by the time these things are built, there is one or two, yeah, if not none. That's yeah, how they always go.
They're going to be disappointed, aren't they? They're going to be
absolutely. And it would be I was going to say it'd be nice if it ran in parallel with the Harrison and Fallon storyline, but it can't because the place you know, got to get proper planning permission first, and
yeah, exactly,
then be built.
Maybe so that won't even happen. Yeah.
Before we go to an ad break,
yeah,
and you have Scarlett Sparrow's tweets of the week, Matt and Justin.
Yeah. So Matt's inverted commas apologized.
Yeah.
To Justin, but then that conversation between Matt and Lillian, where she sort of admitted she still has feelings for him.
Sort of admitted.
Well, did admit that she still has
blatantly admitted.
Yeah. So Matt's not just going to go back to Costa Rica and it's all going to be over. That something more's got to happen. And I know, you know, going back to Witherspoon, I know he feels that obviously Matt is a bad choice for Lillian for so many reasons, but for dramatic soapy soap reasons, that it's got to happen, surely.
Well, does it have to happen, or do we just need the confusion, you know, the angst that Lillian goes through before she realises that actually Justin is the one?
Maybe. You know. Maybe it's enough just that Matt has come in and thrown the cat amongst the pigeons and given a pause for thought. And so if she does marry Justin, she'll be really sure about it. Maybe that is what's happening. I don't know. I don't want to see the end of Tiger and Pussycat.
No, me either. And he did say that, didn't he? Yeah. Inappropriate, Matt. Inappropriate. Oh, sorry. Sorry, Lillian. Sorry, Lillian.
Yeah.
So do you feel, right, because you're very happy and secure in your relationship. How long have you been together now? About a year and a half?
Well, 3 years nearly.
Oh, bloody Nora.
Yeah.
Really? Gosh.
Yes.
It only seemed like a year and a half ago. You said it was a year and a half.
Yeah. Mm. There you go. Funny that.
So you couldn't see, like, an ex coming back into your life, sniffing around a little, just give you a tiny little bit of pause for thought to make you realise that actually you and Matt are even more rock solid, could you?
That sort of happened. I got an email from, there was a guy that I was so in love with when I was in my late teens.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't seen or heard from him for about 12 years. And every now and then he'd pop into my head and I'd think about him and then just go, oh, you know, whatever. But I was properly, you know, he really thought I was really in love with him. And then just after I'd met Matt, I got an email from him completely out of the blue,
mm-hmm,
from this other guy who said he'd like seen me on TV or something, and he'd found my email address and just sent me an email to say, oh, I've just seen you on TV. I just wanted to let you know that I'm really pleased that things are going well for you and stuff. And for a moment, when I saw his name come up on my email inbox, my heart just jumped and I went, oh God, he's back on the scene.
Mm.
But then actually I replied to the email. We had a little email exchange and then I was like, oh, I feel nothing for you. And all it did was reinforce how brilliant Matt is. That's all it did in the end. At first I was like, oh great, I've met this brilliant guy and now you're going to come back in and ruin it. But it absolutely had the opposite effect. It made me realise how much happier my life is with Matt.
So it was beneficial then?
It was beneficial, yeah. Yeah. But he didn't, you know, it was merely, he lives miles away, so we didn't actually meet. But even I think now if we did, I don't think it would, yeah, have any.
You don't think?
I don't, no, I'm 100% sure it wouldn't.
That's the answer.
Yeah.
Oh dear. Matt.
100% sure it wouldn't.
Yeah. Right. On that note, I think you might need to get down from Edinburgh sooner than you think, me dear.
Make a phone call.
Let's go and have an ad break. Come back the other side with Yokel Bear's social media roundup.
Back before podcasts existed. Indeed, back before there was even an internet. Thugs with shotguns burst into the village shop, taking the lovely Betty, clever Debbie, rich businessman Jack, and the waste of space that is Kate Aldridge, hostage. One of the gun-toting raiders was the evil Clive Horribin, rumoured to be the son of not the layabout Bert, but of Darth Vader himself. Clive Skywalking Vader became a fugitive after this epic siege, his whereabouts shrouded in mystery as he was hidden and given succour by his sister Susan Carter, the high priestess of gossip from the dairy in the village shop. Fortunately, Clive was eventually captured and brought to justice at Her Majesty's pleasure. Sadly, prison was not strong enough to contain the pure evil that was Clive Skywalking Vader, and he eventually escaped. And once freed, his hatred of our picturesque village quickly became manifest in devilish form. For reasons that are now lost in the dark mist of time and the many plot lines that have befallen our beloved Ambridge over its 66 years of broadcasting, he turned his deathly ire onto the saintly George Barford, he who was a noble soul and husband of Christine. On one fateful night upon release from bondage, Clive Skywalking Vader Horribin firebombed the Barfords' home, the old police house, leaving George and Chris homeless and bereft of all possessions. All they had left was each other, and noble George supported Christine throughout this terrible ordeal until his untimely death, which sadly left her a widow. We can only speculate about how this story would have ended had they simply installed an ADT smoke detector. Would they have been alerted to the raging inferno sooner? Could they have saved their home and the contents therein before the flames of Vader destroyed everything which they held dear? Some believe it was the strain of the incident that caused George's untimely demise, just 1 year after the fire. Some say you can't put a price on a life, but you can put a price on an ADT smoke detector. And guess what? They start from as little as 7p a day. Some say that's a small price to pay.
Hello, Dumpty Dum, it's Yoko Bear here calling with the social media roundup for the week. I'm going to start with the forum this week because there is a new poster on the forum. Hello, Connor Kinsella, who has posted the most unbelievably brilliant rant about what's going on at the moment. It's too long to go into in detail, but edited highlights would include on the cricket team. Jesus, it's the bloody village cricket team, not the rise and fall of the Roman Empire. And also on Matt Crawford. Is he actually a human being or a genie who appears in a puff of smoke every time a character happens to be available for his "a little birdie told me such and such blah blah blah" shtick? It's a great rant. You should go over and have a look at it. It's fantastic. Also, as well, we've had a request from Isaac Couturs, who is looking to see whether people have MP3 copies of various back episodes of The Archers. So have a look at that post, and if you can help, do so. Roy Field also mentioned last week about trying to use the forum more. Now, hand on heart, I am as guilty as anyone about this. So I think I'm going to make it my aim this week to maybe post some stuff on the forum. And it'd be lovely if you could too. But back to the Book of Face. Started the week asking for some predictions. Zany Salad says, that we'll find out why Jill is so angry with the Duxford sisters. Namely, she had a torrid affair with one of the sisters. Ooh, I don't think that's correct, but I kind of like the idea of it. Mind you, by the end of the week, you know, Hidden Depths with Jill, did not see that coming. Joan Smith says that Oliver will feel so guilt-ridden that he will half the rent of the Grundys, and she says millions of listeners yell their outrage and stamp their feet in unison, and the ensuing seismographic disturbance causes puzzlement amongst non-archers listening geologists. Yeah, I think that would actually make all the ornaments fall off my shelf. We also had a bit of a thread about Oliver. I said he's a real gentleman. Paul Taylor agreed, said absolutely, he's everything Matt and Justin aren't. In fact, he felt guilty for mentioning them in the same post. But a few people couldn't get past Oliver's support for hunting. And yeah, that's kind of a bit of a drawback for me, but I thought this week he was an absolute gentleman. So, on to the big action of the week. Distressed ducks was flying flapjacks. Catherine Kavanagh said, I love that episode. And Women's Hour gave a sneaky hint of it that morning. And she found herself saying, go Jill out loud. Yeah, I did too. And I'm not a big fan of Jill, but I really did enjoy that. Janice Pope says she sensed Duxfords might be introduced as actual characters. Yeah, that's possibly the case. I'm not sure whether I like them. Mind you, as Janice says, often characters are introduced as kind of baddies first, and then we kind of get to like them a bit, apart from Rob, of course. Rachel Kennedy said, that's one hell of a flapjack. Thank God Christine didn't make it. Yeah, I thought that too. We also looked at whether who should take over if the Duxfords aren't going to do the fate. Valerie Bayliss pointed out that the Mark Commode is actually offered. That's a really good idea. But Pam Cruikshank says it should be Royfield, and I totally agree because I know how to suck up to the boss. Basically, that'd be really funny actually if we all turned up at the fate. That'd be really breaking the fourth wall. Luke Hannington said the ghost of Liberace, which made me laugh, but I'm not quite sure why. We also had threads on how poignant Caroline's funeral was, and just want to say absolutely bravo, script writers. Everyone agreed. And we ended the week with a prediction that that basically Oliver will hand over Grange Farm to the Grundys. Not a lot of people really agree with that, but there you go. So it's been quite a busy week on the Book of Face. Needs to be a little bit busier on the forum maybe, and I'm going to try and do something about that as well. But yeah, I thought it was a great week, and we had loads of posts. So go on the Book of Face, go on the forum. And basically, let's see whether this week can top last week. But I'm not sure anything's going to top a Molotov flapjack. That's me done. Okay, bye.
Thank you, Yokel Bear. And
Yokel Bear. I still love his voice. Bring out those children's stories, Yokel Bear.
Watching Game of Thrones is on that as well. Yokel Bear's moonlighting. He does Dum De Dum, and then he does Game of Thrones. Lord Varys. That's him. And isn't it... And I tell you, Caroline's passing has touched everybody.
It really has.
Yeah. And as you said, it was very moving, the memorial, even just down to the fact they had it at the Grundys. And I do like Alan. Yes.
Oh. And
no, that I thought that was...
I did say that vase metaphor was a bit clunky. You put me back together. Oh, dear. Oh,
yes. But, grief.
Yeah.
Standard behaviour for lots of people that, you know, you lose a loved one. And you're too busy organising things.
Yeah.
And then when that focus has gone, you realise you've lost them.
Yeah. It was actually 9 years ago yesterday I lost my dad. And it was exactly that. It was you're busy organising the funeral, making sure everyone who needs to know knows, doing all the paperwork, doing all that. And the minute the funeral's over, you're just at a loss.
Mm.
You know, I just wanted to go back to work because it gave me something to do. You know, because you just don't, you sort of wander around and go, what do I do now?
Yeah.
You know, and you really felt that with Oliver. I totally empathised with that, the sitting in the cafe, just where else is there to go?
And I thought it was really poignant as well. Him being by himself is one thing, but also it's like, well, where do I live now?
Yeah.
He and Caroline had decided to go to Italy, but does he want to be in Italy by himself? You know, and his Italian isn't that good, he said. I cannot remember the reason why Oliver Sterling moved to Ambridge. I really can't remember. But he doesn't have family and roots in Ambridge, we know that.
Probably in the States, aren't they? Because he said
about New York.
His daughter.
Yeah. His daughter says, come and live with us in New York.
Yeah. Do you think he'll come back to the village? I'd like to think he would, but where would he live?
Well, there is the where would he live. And then also, this does mean that Shula can become master of the hunt, doesn't it? So it gives Shula a promotion there. So if he doesn't come back.
What if Ed and Emma get their new house and Oliver moves in with the Grundys?
We've already got the odd couple with Jim and Jazza, haven't we?
What's up to Jim and Jazza?
Well, Jazza's just criminally underserved anyway.
Disappeared. I miss Jazza.
Yeah, no. If you hear Jazza once, you'll hear him twice in the next month, and then that's it. And he's gone for 9 months.
Yeah.
Who knows?
I hope it's because the actor's really busy doing lots of well-paid work. That's what I hope it is.
Well, I hope so too. Shall we now go on to Scarlet Sparrow?
Yes.
And her tweets of the last 7 days.
Ta-da!
Hello, Dumpty Dummers. Scarlet Sparrow here with Tweet of the Week. While there's an unsurprisingly baked goods and senior citizen criminality theme running through most of this week's tweets, firstly, the two worst puns of the week from our very own at Dumpty Dum. This is not a laughing matter, Fallon. It's a fate worse than death. But whoever did that tweet did have the decency to apologise for it. And secondly, from British High Sorority, Jill threw a flapjack in someone's eye. Is that assault and battery? And now on to Jill's new criminal record. There were so many to choose from, but I really chuckled at this one from Mrs. Trellis, who is at The Only Ways Up on the Twitters. Mrs. Archer, your DNA has come up in a cold case review. Can you account for your movements on the 22nd of September 1955? Oh, bollocks. On a completely different subject, John Reed, at John Reed on the Twitters, had Alice, Pip's been spending her weekends doing relief milking. Adam? Well, that's too much information. And finally, Tweet of the Week, which was from Eleanor at Denty Nell. Assault with a flapjack. Meanwhile, the biscuit tin at Brookfield lies empty. Tragedy stalks the land. That's all from Tweets of the Week. Sorry for all the any ones I missed. Thank you very much and goodbye.
Thank you, Miss Sparrow. And, you know, because you couldn't be fussed to not only do a monologue, but not do the Tweets of the Week. Right.
That's not what happened. Somebody forgot to tell me that doing Tweets of the Week was part of the job.
Yeah, fair play. It's not like you don't listen and haven't listened to Dumpty Dum for, what, 2 years, 2.5 years?
About that, yeah.
Yeah. So, really, you know, it's not much of an excuse. No, but I did forget. But Scarlet Sparrow, I tweeted out last week. I said, would somebody like to do Tweets of the Week and then ring in on SpeakPipe? And Scarlet Sparrow said, I would love to do that. And she did an awesome job. Thank you, Scarlet Sparrow,
for making me not look so bad.
Now, let's start to wrap up this mumma jamma. Dumdydum.com, folks, go there. Please go there for the love of all things holy. We've got a forum there. It needs your love. Remember, a couple of weeks ago, I said, please put your backs into it. And a few people have. Post messages, questions on there, but then also, folks, please go on there and actually reply. We just need to properly give it the push that the forum needs. Also on dumdydum.com, you can see the dumdy mogs, dumdy dogs, and you can also see Lucy's monologues. You can and go back and listen to past episodes of Dumdy Dum if you've missed one. Maybe Angela Barnes's first appearance on the show as a celebrity guest, you can go back and do that. So dumdydum.com, folks, go there. And it's also the home, of course, of Tractor, which is the big map where you can pin yourself to and say, I live here. Are you close by? Do you like Dumdy Dum and the Archers also? And if you do, then you can commune with them in real life, not just on social media, but like socially in person. Now, Angela, talking about maps.
Yes.
Roman roads of Britain.
Ooh.
I tell you, it's a beautiful thing. Now, first off, cease and desist anybody from pinging me this link and saying, oh, this might be right up your street, Royfield, Ermine Street. Well done, Mark Everton. Now, Angela, if I had this map once, how many times do you think I had this map?
25 times.
I would say 64,000,080. I've had it like so many times in the last weeks. It is a beautiful thing to behold. So what it is, It's all the Roman roads of Britain, but done like the London Underground. So if you imagine that kind of graphic style.
Oh, right? Wow.
So like Watling Street is in like dark blue, like the Piccadilly line. Things kind of converge out of London. It is great. And there's a bit of history with this. So I think this same person did the Roman roads of Europe map in the style of the London Underground and put it up on the interwebs. And loads of people said, this is really good, but you've forgotten this road here, that road there. And their detailing of Britain was actually a little bit scant.
Right.
So they're taken to task. And then they've gone back, applied themselves, and my God, this thing is fantastic. But I had this easily. I would easily say it's been tweeted to me 25 times. I've had it on Facebook, tweeted to me on Messenger. I've had it on DM, on Twitter. I've had it on my timeline. But it is a great thing. So this week's map is undoubtedly the Roman Roads of Britain map. And I can't even think who sent it to me first, because I've seen it that many times. It's been on The Economist, it's been in The Independent, it's just it's done the rounds, but it is a great map. So thank you to everybody that tweeted that to me. Keep your maps a coming. You know me, I love a map. Now
she loves them too, she just won't admit it.
You know what, she does, doesn't she?
Yeah, you can tell.
Yeah. She always, you know, all these faux kind of, you know, faux, I'm bored. Oh, Royford, blah, blah, blah.
But, it's like when you pull the pigtails of the girl you fancy in the playground. You know, you only protest when you actually really like them.
Judith Madge. That was it for me. Yours, was it? Oh, God.
You still in touch with Judith Madge?
Oh, she wouldn't even look twice at me in the street now, I tell you.
Oh.
But Judith Madge used to sit next to Dawn Swancutt in class, and then she came into school like the next day with her fringe cut. She had a bob. This is like 1979. And she just went from being a girl who you didn't notice to the most beautiful girl in the class. Wow. And I just remember looking and going, oh my God.
Oh, that's so cute. How old were you?
10.
Oh, that's so cute, boy.
Well, listen, I tell you, she lived on my road. She lived on King Standing Road, but further up the road, up the hill. And I remember one day, my dad would always say to me, you know, go get the Sunday newspaper.
Yeah.
And I decided at the age 11, I knew I was going to bump into Judith. And I put on my best jacket, best trousers, everything. I put on a shirt and tie. I'm 11. And it was just one of those, like, you know, ties with the little bit of elastic at the top, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you know, so, you know, put it underneath your collar. And my mum said, what are you doing dressed like that? And I went, I just wanted to look smart to get the paper. And she just smiled, patted me on the head and said, oh, go on then, son. It was the slowest walk ever because I just wanted to see Judith and I never did. But the effect that woman had on me, that girl, I should say, when I discovered...
Did you not see her?
A year or so after senior school. So I haven't seen her in, like, literally 30 years.
Wouldn't it be great if it turns out she's a Dumpty Dumber? Oh, I just imagine listening now at home.
There is somebody from my junior school that does listen to Dumpty Dum who's actually tweeted me a couple of times and says, hello, Royfield, you love the Archers. But no, Judith Madge. Just to finish up on Judith Madge.
Yeah.
She did. So, you know, you have your, when you finish junior school, about to finish junior school, you know, you put in your options where, you know, which senior school you're going to go to.
Yeah.
She said she's going to Perry Common and I was going to Great Bar. I was gutted. I marched back to my mum and dad and said, I'm changing it. Do not want to go to Great Bar. I want to go to Perry Common. And my dad was very firm, said, that's what you put, son. That's where you go. And I said, no, Dad, no.
Oh, but you got separated.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
But hey, hum. Yeah. Judith Madge, where is she now? What is she doing?
Oh, if you're listening, Judith Madge, get in touch.
Who were you in love with at school?
Oh, Tim, well, his name was Timothy Peake, but he wasn't the astronaut. But yeah, Tim Peake, and he was blonde and like the football star, and all the girls loved him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was definitely the one. We used to play Kiss Chase, but I loved him so much that I wouldn't play if he was playing because I got too nervous.
I remember playing Kiss Chase, and I just ran after Judith Madge, right? And I rugby tackled her, and I remember her dress flying up and me seeing her blue knickers, right? And I did.
Roy.
And she burst out crying, Royfield, you've hurt me, and went off to the dinner lady.
Oh, Roy.
I've never been more gutted. I said to myself, I didn't mean to hurt her. I just wanted to kiss her. Like, I'm going to be beside myself.
Oh, that's so cute. Yeah, no. Worrying. Oh, I really want to know where she is now.
Yeah, me too. No, I don't. I don't need to become a middle-aged stalker. That'd be terrible.
You must have searched for her on Facebook.
You know what? I actually haven't.
Really?
I'm going to do that as soon as we get... Can we just rush through the show so I can just get onto Facebook?
Sure, no worries. Let's get to the end. You can do that.
So we've done the maps. Now, folks, reviews. Used to say it at the end of every show. And we don't anymore, but really, please write us a review, ideally on Apple Podcasts, formerly known as iTunes, but on any bit of the interweb where podcasts are that you can write a review, please write us a review. It's super important because it means that more people will then be alerted to Dum-de-Dum. We are actually on New and Noteworthy on iTunes at the moment, on Apple Podcasts at the moment, which is all fine and dandy, but please, with your help, we can go up those iTunes charts. And you know what, Angela Barnes?
Yes, Roy.
We got as high as number 9 in the UK iTunes charts for TV and media once. Yeah. And that was because we had a whole push on people writing reviews. Because we'd had the algorithm works. It's the amount of downloads, yes, but with reviews as well. So we got really quite high. So we want to get back into that top 10, folks, and you can help us by going onto Apple Podcasts and writing a review.
Yay!
Now
I'm in the fringe at the moment, so I'm trying not to think about reviews. But yeah, feel sick when I hear the word.
I tell you, talking about reviews, a program which I actually miss, Late Night Review.
Oh yeah. Yeah, where they were sat sort of around a table. And...
Yeah, Tom Paulin, that kind of bit miserable Irish bloke. I used to really like him and stuff. Yeah, I used to really like Late Night Review. And then there's that that black guy. I was going to Hugo Echion or something or another. Oh, God. I didn't like him much. Right. He didn't half like himself. But anyway, now I do miss that as a show, though. I want to bring that back.
It existed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I only remembered this because listening to Wittertainment, Mark Kermode mentioned it, I think, last week. Was it the week before? And I went, oh, yeah, you used to be on that. I used to like that show.
Yeah.
So do people in Edinburgh absolutely live in fear of reviews?
Well, you sort of try and kid yourself that, like, the bottom line is it shouldn't matter. As long as you've got a room full of people enjoying the show, that's what should matter. But by the same token, you're only human. So when somebody writes something and they haven't enjoyed the show, it does upset you because you know how much work you've put into it and it feels very personal because it's just you. You haven't got a cast or a crew or all those other people that you can share that with. It feels, when you're a stand-up comic, because you've written it and you're performing it, when someone doesn't like it, you can't help but take that personally.
Yeah, no, that I completely and utterly understand. And you're nakedly revealing yourself, aren't you? It's all about you. It's not as if you're an actor on an ensemble production, so you can actually say, well, actually, the director was bad. You know, I was given bad direction.
I can't blame a writer. Yeah. I can't blame anyone but me if people don't like it.
Mm.
You know, so it is quite nerve-wracking. But having said that, it's comedy. No one's going to die. It doesn't really matter. Like, I know it's my job.
No one's going to die laughing. Boom.
I mean, I might die, metaphorically. But, you know, I'm not changing the world with what I'm doing. And I'm just the luckiest person in the world to get paid to do the job that I do. So, if you know, that's all I can do, really. And I've got, by this point in proceedings, I've got no power over what reviewers write about me. So there's no point worrying about it, really.
You know? That.
Yeah. So we'll see. But as long as punters enjoy it, they're the ones that matter. The ones that have bought ticket and
do you
along.
Think reviewers are harsher on female performers?
No, I don't think. I think that might have been the case a while ago. I think now most of the. So there's two types of reviewer really at the Edinburgh Fringe. You've got your professional reviewers, so the ones who write for broadsheets or specific comedy websites, who are, you know, that's their job. But then what you get a lot of up here is sort of student reviewers from various student papers and things. And they basically write reviews so they can get free tickets to shows. Mm-hmm. And they're the ones I kind of disregard because, you know, they haven't really got the, like I say disregard. Obviously, they're entitled to say whether or not they've enjoyed a show or what they liked about it or what they didn't. But professionally, you know, I'll take the criticism from certain reviewers who I respect and I think, well, they know what they're talking about. But the thing with comedy is it's absolutely impossible to be everybody's cup of tea because sense of humour is so varied. So there will be people who like what I do and there'll be people who don't, and there's nothing I can do about that. And if one of them happens to write a blog about how much they don't like what I do, well, that's up to them. They can do that. But if I'm going to get upset every time someone does that, then, you know, I'm taking it too seriously. Yeah.
I think that's the right attitude to have, madam.
Yeah. You've got to try and just remember, I think, that none of it really matters and that people might read reviews, but the bottom line
that's a little bit hard to say. You can't say that none of it really matters when you have a livelihood that not necessarily intrinsically wrapped up in it, but it is in part because you're doing this to forward your brand, aren't you?
Oh, yeah, of course. But I don't think a bad review has the power to stop me getting work at this stage. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't think one reviewer not enjoying my show will mean that I lose work particularly. Mm. Unless the show turns out, you know, that everybody hates it, which could happen, then maybe it'll have an impact on my career. But at this point, I have to just stay positive and think of the people that are in the room and whether or not they're enjoying the show and not worry about what people will write about it after the fact. You know, because the people that I'm most concerned about are the people who have bought a ticket to come and see me. They're the important people to me. They're the ones I want to keep happy.
Cool. You know?
Yeah.
You're going to write us a review?
Go on then, I'll write you a review. Why not? I'll do that.
Good.
Yes.
And why don't you as well, listener, write us a review?
If you'd like to help keep our little show on the road, there are two ways this can be done. You can donate by hitting the donate button on the site, or you can sponsor us via patreon.com. Or if you work for a company with lots of moolah who wants to reach 35,000 bloody marvellous, intelligent and generally spiffing people worldwide, then give us the contact details of your marketing person and we'll harass them into sponsoring us. Hurrah!
Remember to get in contact with us, folks. You can send us a voice message via SpeakPipe on our site, or you can call us on 0203-031-3105 to leave us a message. On social media, specifically Twitter, you can find us. We are at DumDeeDum. I can be found at Royfield, and Angela is at
Angela Barnes.
On Facebook, you can find us by simply typing in DumDeeDum, and you can join the Millie Bell and Yokel Bear show. And there hasn't been much Millie Bell recently because I think she's away on holiday. It's all been Yokel Bear, Lord Varys himself.
I hope you're having a lovely time, Millie Bell.
Me too. That's just about it from us. Next week, Lucy V. Freeman will be back with Robert Naked Fingers Wilson.
Lovely.
It's been lovely having you in the hot seat in Derek's bedroom for the last 2 weeks, Angela.
Thank you very much for having me. I have very much enjoyed myself.
I don't know how you could actually be in Derek's bedroom and be in Edinburgh at the same time. How does that work?
Derek has bedrooms in every city. Yeah.
There you go. You heard it here first.
I know.
Take care, you Angela Barnes.
And you, Roy.
Love you lots. Thank you for doing this. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. It's been a total pleasure.